Nearly 2,000 years into a recounting of the strategic points in man's spiritual history, an interesting issue is introduced. In the biblical narrative, we learned that God called Abraham and Sarah out of Babylon, one of the suburbs of Babylon called Ur of the Chaldees, called them out, and they eventually ended up going to the land of promise, going to a place that God said He would show them and lead them to. And Exodus 12 speaks of that calling. And Abraham and Sarah responded to God, and Lot came along with them. And they were all in a relationship with God from that point forward. As the story unfolds, Lot moved to the area of Sodom, and there were five prominent cities in this area, one of which was Sodom, another which was Gomorrah. There were three other cities that were there as well. And these cities were quite wealthy, and individuals from over around the area of Babylon figured out there's a lot of money here, and we can come over and take it. And that's what they did. So you had these four kings that came from the Tigris-Euphrates area. They came to the area of Sodom and Gomorrah and the other three cities and basically conquered them. And the cities served these kings for 13 years. And then in the 14th year, they said, sorry, we're not going to keep paying the tribute. So the king said, well, if you're not going to pay the tribute, then we're going to come over and make sure you pay the tribute. So they came over, they defeated the kings of the five cities and ended up taking all the loot that they could gather up. And they also took Lot and all of his belongings. And they all headed back to where they had come from. So one of the people that was aware of this came to Abram and told him that they've taken the cities and they've taken your nephew Lot and all of his belongings. And so Abraham loaded up his 318, got his 318 trained men together, and they went after these kings. And he, along with his allies, defeated these kings. And in defeating them, they were able to get all of the loot back and to bring it back back into the land. So, interestingly, that brings us to Genesis chapter 14, where we see what happens here after Abraham has defeated the kings. And something interesting is introduced here. So you're 2,000 years into man's history, and here you are in the 14th chapter of the book of Genesis. So all you're getting in the book of Genesis are highlights of man's history during this period of time. You're not getting all of the intimate details that maybe we would like to know. You just get high points and things that God wants to emphasize to those people whom He will call and work with. So in Genesis chapter 14, beginning in verse 18, Abraham and his men, they come back by a certain route, and they end up in a particular place. It says, then Melchizedek, king of Salem, Melchizedek, king of peace, you know, Salem means peace. And the city that they're coming by here is what eventually became known as Jerusalem. And here is Melchizedek, this king of Salem, who is dwelling there. And he brought out bread and wine. He was priest of God Most High. So this individual was the king of this particular place. He was also a high priest. He was also a high priest. And he blessed him, that is, he blessed Abraham, and said, blessed be Abram of God Most High. So he acknowledges God, the God Most High. Blessed be God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. So he's stressing something important here to Abram about what's taken place. He's telling him that God Most High has blessed him in allowing him to defeat his enemy and to recover the spoil. and an acknowledgement that God is the possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be God Most High who has delivered your enemies into your hand. So there's an acknowledgement of God Most High. This high priest here makes this statement. And then it says that Abraham did something. It says here, and he gave him, He gave him a tithe of all. So who did Abraham give tithe to? He gave it to Melchizedek. He gave it to this king, this high priest in his time. And as you think about this, out of all of the incidents that have taken place over 2,000 years, why would God include this one? Why put this in there? And also, we might think about another question is, why did the idea of giving 10%, a tenth of the spoil, to the high priest of Salem, Melchizedek, where did that come from? How did he come up with that? As you think about this, was the idea of giving a tenth of the spoil something that Abraham came up with on his own? You know, as he was chasing after these kings, this is something he had an epiphany and said, hey, you know, when we're done with this, I'm going to give 10% of the spoil to this priest over here, this king's Melchizedek, when we're done. Why 10%? Why not 20% or 30%? Why give anything at all? Humanly speaking, if I keep all of it, it's all mine. And why do I have to give any of it to anyone else? You know, human nature says keep it all. And as you think about this, this incident being cited, there's a reason for it. It's not just a random thought that Moses chose to insert into the biblical narrative. In this initial account of tithing, it's significant to note the following. Who received the tithe? God's representative on earth at that time, who was the source of God's blessings to the tithe payer. And God's representative here was Melchizedek. And we'll focus on this Melchizedek later on, so it's something you might keep in mind. We're not going to get into it, but we will discuss it toward the end of the sermon. The reason for tithing is this. There's an acknowledgement of God as the ultimate owner of all wealth and the provider of blessings. And how did they compute the tithe? It was 10% of Abram's increase. 10% of his increase, in this case, the spoils of battle. So he gave 10% to God. So God is the one who inspired the subject of tithing to be introduced here. And tithing is introduced in the context of a faithful man and woman, Abraham and Sarah, who have been called out and entered into a relationship with God. And God is telling us that those who are called out and faithful to him will follow the example of Abraham in tithing. And we are shown that tithing is an act of faith toward God. And as you look at the Hebrew word here in Genesis and elsewhere, it means tenth. It means tenth. And it is from that concept of a tenth that we get the word tithe. Tithe is just an old English way of saying tenth. So at this point, we have to recognize that the nation of Israel does not exist. This predates ancient Israel by 430 some years. So ancient Israel is not even in the picture at this point. And yet God is instructing his people to tithe. So we find the father of the faithful tithing. And tithing is a recognition of God and his representatives. And keep these things in mind as we go forward. Now let's go to Genesis chapter 28. Genesis chapter 28. Genesis chapter 28, verse 20. Now this is the situation here that is unfolding is Jacob is on the run because his brother desires to kill him. So he's left his father Isaac's house and he's going to back to where his family has relatives and he's going to live with them. And on his way he comes to a place that's known as Bethel and there he lays down and rests and he has this dream and the angels are going back and forth up to God's throne. And so we come to verse 20. It says, then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me So Jacob at this point is not really a deeply converted man. And he's basically saying, God, if you're with me, then I'm going to do something. He's not totally committed. It's going to depend on God being with him. So he said, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I am going and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. Hey, if you give me all these things and help all these things to work out and I'm able to come back this way, then you're going to be my God. He's not a deeply converted person at this point. But by the time he does come back through all the experiences and all of the beatings that he goes through, he eventually catches on and he is a converted man when he comes back. He is a changed man, but God still got some work to do in his life at this point. So he goes on to say in verse 22, God is going to be my God. And this shall be the stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. So where did this come from? Where does he come up with the concept of giving God a tenth? Is it something that, again, is just a random thought? Is it something that, he again dreamed up on his own? Or is it possible that it was something that he picked up from his father, Isaac, and then Isaac had picked it up from his father? As you look at Abraham and you think about him in a couple of different verses that are describe him, in Genesis chapter 26, verses 4 and 5, God makes note of Abraham's qualities, and he says, "In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." So God had instructed Abraham. Abraham had taken that instruction and he had obeyed God. He had obeyed God's teaching, which he gave to him by voice. In chapter 18, verse 19 of Genesis, it says, "For I have known him." God knew Abraham. "In order that he may command his children and his household after him." So Abraham had been instructed by God, and then what Abraham did is he instructed his children and his household, that they may keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. So Abraham was obedient, and he took the knowledge that God gave to him and passed it along to his family. So by inference, it would seem to make sense that the concept of tithing had been passed along from Abraham to Isaac, and Isaac had passed it along to Jacob, and Jacob, having been taught that this was something that was important to a relationship with God, then tithed. He said, "I will tithe if you bless me." So Jacob received the idea of tithing through his family and understood that giving a tenth was part of a relationship with the God of Abraham and Isaac. So again, we see two citations of tithing, and Israel is not on the scene at this point. So it's telling us that tithing is a principle that predated the covenant at Sinai. So you can't, people say, "Well, the covenant of Sinai is over. We don't have to do this any longer." You've got to go back and say, "Well, wait a minute, that principle predates that." But let's see what God tells us in regard to the covenant at Sinai and his dealings with Israel. So let's go to Leviticus chapter 27. Leviticus chapter 27. Leviticus chapter 27, verse 30. So God here is giving instruction to Israel, and he's talking to the nation of Israel about tithing. And God is codifying his laws and statutes and judgments and what Israel is to do in their interactions with God. And so God speaks of tithing in the verses we're going to look at here. Verse 30, "And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's." So we learn something right off the bat here as we look at this. When we look at the tithe, it tells us that it is God's. So 10% of whatever increase Israel had belonged to God. He tells you right off the bat here in a very clear-cut statement that it belongs to God. Whether it's the grain, the seed of the land, or grain, or the fruit of the tree, it is the Lord's. It is something that belongs to God. And it's a fundamental principle we have to stop and recognize, is that God, everything belongs to God, and God has designated 10% of whatever our increase is His. And because it belongs to Him, it says it is holy to the Lord. It is holy. It is God's and therefore holy. So, you know, if something is holy, you want to treat it respectfully. You want to realize to whom it belongs and be respectful in that. Verse 31, if a man wants at all to redeem any of his tithes, he shall add one-fifth to it. So if you have, your tithe is in grain, or your tithe is in the animals, or it's in fruit, and you say, well, I want to turn this into money, that is, to redeem it. If you want to turn it into money, then he says you should add a fifth part to it. So if you end up getting a $100 for your crop, then you would, because you've turned it into money, you would add that additional fifth part of it in order to fulfill what God's instructed. And concerning the tithe of the herd or the flock of whatever passes under the rod, the tenth one shall be holy to the Lord. So you have your sheep and they are, or cattle or whatever it is, and they pass under the rod and you're counting them. Every tenth one would be God's. He shall not inquire whether it is good or bad. So you're having them pass under the rod and you're not to look at them and say, well, here, let's make sure that the one that's lame here is the one God gets. He said, don't be doing that. We don't give God the lame and the halt. We don't give God the one that's sick, the one that's injured. We don't do that. We let it basically play out as just randomly. He says, you shall not inquire whether it is good or bad, nor shall he exchange it. And if he exchanges it at all, then both it and the one exchanged for it shall be holy. It shall not be redeemed. These are the commandments which the Lord commanded Moses for the children of Israel on Mount Sinai. So these were the guidelines for the people of Israel and how they were to function and how they were to deal with the money or the increase that they had in their land. And they were to acknowledge the fact that God was the possessor of heaven and earth. Everything belonged to God. And there are a number of different scriptures. We've seen one here which tells us that 10% belongs to God. And God tells us that a number of things that this principle is mentioned, where it says, blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. Everything belongs to God. We are just stewards of what God has given to us. In Exodus chapter 19, verse 5, it says, all the earth is mine. Everything is God's. And chapter 24, verse 1 of Psalms says, the earth is the Lord's in all its fullness, the world and all those who dwell therein. All those things belong to God. And God said, yes, they all belong to me because I brought them into being, but you're able to keep them. You're able to make use of them, but I would like you to acknowledge me by giving me the tithe. Giving me the 10% is an acknowledgement of God. And, you know, that would be something that you would have to think about as a farmer or a herder or whatever your job was, because you would have to stop and think, okay, I have a responsibility to give God a tithe of these things that I have had as an increase. And you would have to think about, okay, what percentage of this? I've got, I had 10 lambs, and one of these lambs is going to be God's. And I've got to make that choice. And so you had to acknowledge God and go through this, think this through as you came to that decision. Another thing that we have to always think about is, you know, we have an increase. We have to stop and remember that God is the possessor of all. And it is God who gives us the power to get wealth. That point is made in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 18. God gives us the power to get wealth. You know, if we have a job, God is the one who's opened the door for us to have that job and to make an increase. And we're to stop and think that, thank you, God, for the job that I have. Thank you that I can make an increase. That, and we, I don't believe any of us, too many of us farm at this stage in life. There may be some, but most of us earn a wage. And it is a blessing that God has given us to be able to have the power to get wealth. And you may say, well, I'm not getting wealthy, and we may not be. The concept there is that we have a way to make an increase and to earn a living and pay our expenses and have food on the table and a house over our head and clothes on our back. So as we look at this subject of tithing, it is first and foremost an act of recognition of God as our source of existence, our source of blessing, and the source of our providence. God provides all these things for us. And our tithe, and by going through the process of tithing, we acknowledge that. It is a way that we can do so. So to whom did Israel give their tithes? To whom did Israel give their tithes? Now, Abraham was in a unique situation. For some reason, the one that we know as Jesus Christ, as we'll see as we later on in the sermon, was dwelling in Jerusalem. Why? I don't know. But in some way, shape, or form, the work of God was going on there. He was the high priest of God. He was God's representative on earth. And Abraham gave him of the tithes. You know, and it doesn't give us any details about what he was doing there. But obviously he was doing something that was important to God at that time. And he isn't there forever. You know, later on when Israel comes into the land of Canaan, God, the one we know as Jesus Christ, is not in Jerusalem any longer. So, and it took a long time for them to actually conquer that city. And, you know, it was all the way down to David's time when the city was actually conquered. But to whom was Israel told to give their tithes? Let's go to Numbers chapter 18. Numbers chapter 18, beginning in verse 21. Numbers 18, verse 21. Behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tithes in Israel. So the tithes were to be given to the children of Levi as an inheritance in return for the work which they perform, the work of the tabernacle of meeting. So they were to give their tithes to the Levites. Hereafter the children of Israel shall not come near the tabernacle of meeting, lest they bear sin and die, but the Levites shall perform the work of the tabernacle of meeting. And they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, that among the children of Israel they shall have no inheritance. So they didn't have any inheritance. And as a result of that, verse 24 says, for the tithes of the children of Israel, which they offer up as a heave offering to the Lord, I have given to the Levites as an inheritance. Therefore I have said to them, among the children of Israel they shall have no inheritance. So they didn't have an inheritance, and God set it up to where they would receive the tithes. And the tithes would be their portion, and the tithe would be used for doing the work that God needed done at the tabernacle and later on at the temple. Something interesting here, so the Levites received all the tithes. Did the Levites tithe? Let's go down to verse 26. It says, speak thus to the Levites and say to them, when you take from the children of Israel the tithes which I have given you from them as your inheritance, then you shall offer up a heave offering of it to the Lord, a tenth of the tithe. So they received the tithes, and they were to take a tenth of the tithe they received, and your heave offering shall be reckoned to you as though it were the grain of the threshing floor and as the fullness of the winepress. Thus you shall also offer a heave offering to the Lord from all your tithes, which you shall receive from the children of Israel. And you shall give the Lord's heave offering from it to Aaron the priest. So 10% of the tithe went to the priesthood. It went to Aaron, the Aaronic priesthood. And this was how God worked these things out in his time, in order that the Levites would be provided for, and they could do the work that needed to be done, and the priests could do their work as well. And so the tithes were to finance God's spiritual work in Israel, to do all of those spiritual things in service of the nation. And as you look at this, the people of Israel were to tithe, that the Levites were to tithe, and a portion of that went to Aaron. So the tithe was allocated for God's spiritual work to be done at that time, and the work was carried out by the priest and by the Levites at the tabernacle and at the temple. And we see the principle of tithing carrying on. And it's interesting, it began with Abraham and carried on through Isaac and Jacob, and then now Jacob's descendants have also been instructed in the subject of tithing. Tithing continues in this family with whom God was working. So it appears, and you know, as you look at Israel, just because God taught them or gave them a principle doesn't mean they actually did what God told them to do. Unfortunately, as you go through the history of Israel, sometimes they were really diligent about it and sometimes they weren't. In the time of the judges, we find that there's a judge who lives in Bethlehem, but he leaves Bethlehem because he can't support himself. Well, he was supposed to have been supported through the tithes. So obviously, in that time, they weren't tithing regularly. They weren't tithing in sufficient to a sufficient degree to support this Levite, and so he went elsewhere. I think he was not a Levite, but a priest. And so he left his land and eventually became a priest to the nation of Dan. But if they had been doing what they were supposed to do, then he would have been able to dwell where he lived and carry on his service at the temple. In Hezekiah's time, it seems Israel was not tithing to support the priesthood and the Levites. It was a time in Israel when they were neglecting the Bible and its teachings, and they were neglecting the temple. The temple was not well cared for. But Hezekiah came across the scriptures and was inspired to begin a revival in the nation of Israel, or the nation of Judah in his case. Let's go to 2 Chronicles 31. And there's a revival that takes place among the people of God. And it seems whenever there's a revival among the people of God that tithing is reintroduced. You find this taking place throughout Israel's history. That when there was a revival, not only did they begin to keep the Sabbath and the holy days and they began to take care of the temple, but tithing is also something that they begin to pay attention to. 2 Chronicles chapter 31, verse 5. As soon as the commandment was circulated, the children of Israel brought in abundance. So once they received the instruction that they were to tithe, they brought in abundance, the first fruits of grain and wine, oil and honey, and of all the produce of the field, and they brought it in abundantly, the tithe of everything. So they received this instruction, and apparently their hearts were such that they were willing to receive the instruction and respond to it, and they began to tithe. And the children of Israel and Judah, who dwelt in the cities of Judah, brought the tithe of oxen and sheep, also the tithe of holy things which were consecrated to the Lord, their God, that they laid in heaps. You can imagine the number of people that lived in Judah at the time, and they brought up in abundance. It all came up at once, and it was all laying there in heaps. In the third month, they began laying them in heaps, and they finished in the seventh month. So they gathered for a long period of time, and there were great heaps of all the tithe that was brought in. But they had been neglecting it, and now they were getting back to it and responding very positively. Judah went into captivity, and in Babylon they suffered that captivity for 70 years, and then they did come back, and they returned to Judah, and God allowed them to come back and rebuild the temple and to get things up and running again. But in Nehemiah's time, he heard that things weren't going so well there. And so he came back and sought to get Israel back on the right track, to do whatever he could to get them organized and overcome all of the obstacles they were facing. And one of the things that he found was that they were not tithing. Let's go to Nehemiah chapter 12. Nehemiah chapter 12, verse 10. Well, that's not it, but they had a revival in the land, and they began to keep the tithes and to gather the tithes. Someone may come across. Let's go down to verse 44. My eye comes upon it here. It says, "And at that same time, some were appointed over the rooms of the storehouses for the offerings, the first fruits and the tithes, to gather into them from the fields of the cities the portion specified by the law of the priests and Levites. For Judah rejoiced over the priests and Levites who ministered." So they began to a revival in the land, and that was brought about in Nehemiah's time to get them back on the right track, and tithing was part of that. Part of the God's guiding them and directing them to get on the right track. It tells us there in Nehemiah 12, verse 44. So God, you can see here that throughout the time of ancient Israel and Judah that they tithed, but they weren't always consistent. And God inspired one of the prophets to comment on that and the seriousness of giving our tithes. And it's a passage that we're all quite familiar with. Malachi chapter 3. Malachi chapter 3. The prophet Malachi is trying to get Judah on the right track here, and Judah unfortunately had strayed in certain areas. They were giving the lame and the halt as offerings. They resented having to give offerings, and they were falling down in tithes and offerings, as God tells us here in Malachi chapter 3, beginning in verse 8. "Remember that God has said that the tithe is mine. The tithe is mine." Verse 8, he says, "Will a man rob God?" You know, when we think of it in those terms, we'd probably think twice about robbing God. Maybe that's not a good idea. But many times as we look at our money, our finances, we don't think of it in those terms. But here the prophet lays it out in a most interesting way. "Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, in what way have we robbed you?" And God's response is, "In tithes and offerings." Not only are you not giving the tithes, but you're not giving offerings either. And so it tells us that we should be tithing to God, and we should also be giving offerings at the appropriate times. We can give an offering any time, but we also are instructed at the feast time to give offerings on the holy days. He says here, "You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation." The whole nation was falling short here. And he tells us that if you do not tithe, you will be cursed. You will be cursed. He says, "Bring all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house." So begin tithing and make sure there's food in my house, says the Lord of hosts. "And if you do that," he says, "see if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such blessing that there will not be room enough to receive it." So he says, if you begin to tithe, and you faithfully tithe, you will be blessed. And he said, the blessing will be such that you will be blessed abundantly. You will be blessed abundantly. And you know, most of the time as we begin to, if you recall back to when you began to consider this subject, when tithing was something that was presented to you. I mean, I grew up and I attended church, but you know what? I never knew a thing about tithing. I knew that they passed a plate around every week when I went to church, and people threw a little bit of money in. And but some threw a lot, some threw a little. And they had little envelopes there that you could put your tithe in and all of that, or your money in, to give an offering. And they collected an offering each week. But I didn't understand that. I had never heard of the concept of tithing until I came into contact with the church. And I came across, you know, as part of reading the literature about this subject, this is one of the passages that I came upon, and I thought, well, I guess my responsibility is to tithe because I don't want to rob God. So I worked on Saturdays and Sundays for $1.50 an hour at Ozzie's Hamburger Stand, so that little pittance of money that I got, you know, I began tithing on it. But you took that first step. And God said that He will provide for you, that God will bless you if you tithe. Now, the only way that you can ever figure out whether that actually works is to begin to tithe. You'll never know if it works if you don't do it. But if you do it, you'll find out that what it says there actually comes true. And many people, when they begin to tithe, can't afford to do it. They can't afford to do it. They're financially in a corner. They're strapped financially. They're not making it on 100%, and you're asking me to give 10%? Sorry, I can't do that. People say that. I can't afford it. But you know, as you begin to do it, somehow you make it. When you begin to do it, you find out, you know, I'm making it, and I have less money. So I don't know whether it's because, and obviously God's blessing us. Possibly also we begin to watch our money more carefully, that allows us to make our money go further. But God blesses you and takes 90% and makes it go further than 100%. And God helps things to work out, and God helps the blessings of heaven to be poured out upon us. And basically all we're doing is acknowledging God and His might and His power and all of the things that He can do on our behalf. So we begin to offer God that tithe and give to Him, and God said He'll bless us. So as we've looked at what we've seen here in the Old Testament, or the Hebrew Scriptures, as they might more accurately be called, we've seen that tithing is introduced in the context of the father of the faithful giving a tenth of the spoil to the high priest of Salem and king of Salem, Melchizedek. It's doubtful that Abraham and Jacob, who are mentioned, came up with these ideas on their own. God must have introduced that idea of tithing to them. We saw that the teaching about tithing was passed on from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob and Jacob's descendants, the nation of Israel. We also learned that the tithe belongs to God. It is holy to Him, and God is the possessor of all, and He is the one who gives us the power to have an increase. 10% of what we produce belongs to God, and so we understand how to calculate it. And with the founding of the nation of Israel, God again laid all of that out for them. And so we see that as we honor God, God will bless us as we tithe. Now, as we think about being Christians, we ask the question, should we continue to tithe? We're Christians. We're Christians. So should we continue to tithe? And as you, if you're around the church long enough, that question will someday be posed to you, and people will try to give you, explain to you why you don't have to tithe. And so, interestingly, as we left the Worldwide Church of God in 1995, they said you don't have to tithe. Now, amazingly, they found their income fell precipitously because they took them at their word. Oh, we don't have to tithe. So they quit tithing. And then they somehow stumbled onto the fact that they did need to tithe and began teaching it again. So we've always understood that tithing does continue forward for Christians. And, we'll look at some scriptures here in the New Testament that emphasize that fact. As you look at this, you know, you look at, if you're looking for a scripture that tells you you don't have to tithe under the new covenant, there's not one. So there's no loophole. There is no specific scripture that says you're a Christian, you don't have to tithe. So that's not in there. So God does not specifically say you don't have to tithe. In fact, God tells us in the context of Matthew chapter 22, where somebody asked him if they should pay their taxes. He says, whose picture is on that coin? And they said, Caesar's picture. And then what does Christ say? He said, then give to Caesar what is Caesar's and give to God what is God's. And God has told us in the Old Testament that the tithe belongs to God. So what he told us in several different locations there, most specifically in Leviticus 27, verse 30. Christ also addressed the subject of tithing in Matthew chapter 23, verse 23. Matthew chapter 23, verse 23. And as in this, the group that he's addressing here is he's addressing the scribes and Pharisees specifically. But he also has his disciples there who are observing what's going on, and Matthew here was inspired to write this down. And so it's not just for the people of that time. They're dead and gone. It's for those people who would come along later. And he says in Matthew chapter 23, verse 23, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin." And so they were very meticulous in counting all of the little seeds and things that make up these spices, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law. You're very meticulous in that. But there are matters that are more weighty because they impact relationships between human beings. And you're neglecting those. You're very diligent in tithing, but your interactions with other human beings, you're neglecting. And he goes on to cite what those are. He's the weightier matters of the law: justice and mercy and faith. You're neglecting those. You're diligent in tithing, but you're neglecting those weightier matters of the law. He says, these you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. He's saying you should be attending to the weightier matters of the law: justice and mercy and faith. But you should also be tithing as well. It should be a whole package where you're tithing as well as attending to the weightier matters of the law, is the point that he's making. And so in that scripture, he emphasizes we are to attend to our relationships with our fellow Christians, but we're also to attend to the subject of tithing as well. Let's go to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10 is in the context of the sending out of the 70. The 70 are being sent out in God's service. They are his representatives. And let's look at verses 7 and 8. Luke 10, verses 7 and 8. So he's telling them how they're to conduct themselves, and, you know, they're going about doing his work, and how are they going to be supported? And he brings this out here in verses 7 and 8. He says, "And remain in the same house, eating and drinking such things as they give, for the laborer is worthy of his wages." A laborer in God's service is worthy of his wages. "Do not go from house to house. Whatever city you enter, they receive you, eat such things as are set before you." And the principle is that a laborer is worthy of his wages, whatever those wages may be. And he spells that out in other locations. During his earthly ministry, Jesus promised that he would build his church. He would build his church. And under the terms of the new covenant, the church would become the spiritual Israel of God. So there is no physical... God is not focused at this point so much on the physical nation. He's not forgotten them. But his primary focus in our time is upon the church, the spiritual nation. And he's going to build that spiritual nation. That church is going to be consisting of converted individuals who have come to a relationship with God. And these individuals are the seed of Abraham. And you know, we can go to Abraham and we can see his example. And one of his examples was tithing. He is the father of the faithful. So if we're going to follow Abraham's example and we are going to be faithful people, then it would make sense that we would tithe. That we would offer up tithes to God in order that the church would be built. The needs of God that God addressed with his people Israel remain the same as he works in an even greater way with the church. Because we know that God's way of life is to be taught to the world. The church is to be nurtured and cared for. And members are to continue to assemble on the Sabbaths and the annual holy days. And the widows and the poor are also to be taken care of as well. And we're not going to talk about keeping the holy days or the widows today. We'll do that next week. The book of Hebrews discusses the temporary nature of the fleshly ordinances. So the tabernacle and the temple were temporary. All of the ordinances, the washings and the sacrifices and ceremonies and all of those things that took place there were pointing to something that was ultimately going to work out. And they were temporary. They were temporary. And so with the coming of Christ and his sacrifice, things changed. Sacrifices identified with the temple, including animal sacrifices and all of that, that physical worship has now been rendered obsolete. But the remainder of God's law, including tithing, remains. So the removal of fleshly ordinances imposed until the time of Reformation did not do away with tithing. It did, however, necessitate a change in who would receive the tithes. As we've said, no longer was it the Levites who received the tithes. We don't have a temple. We don't have a Levitical priesthood or an Aaronic priesthood. It now reverts to the priesthood of Melchizedek. So it's interesting that we give our tithes to the priesthood of Melchizedek because he is our high priest. He's a priest after the order of Melchizedek. And the ministers of Jesus Christ are serving in that way to help carry on the work. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 7 and look at this more closely. Hebrews chapter 7. Hebrews clearly tells us that the Aaronic priesthood and the Levitical priest are no longer to carry out their functions because there is no tabernacle or temple. And there is a change been made. So it begins talking about this being we know as Melchizedek in chapter 7, verse 1. For this Melchizedek, king of Salem, it's interesting, he's called King of Salem, and one of his titles in Isaiah is King of Peace. Priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being translated King of Righteousness, and then also King of Salem, meaning King of Peace. Without father, without mother, without genealogy. So if you look at the priesthood, they were very fixated on genealogy. And did you really have a genealogical line that led to you being a priest? And that's irrelevant here. He's without father. He's without mother. Well, that can't be a human being because every human being has a father and mother. Having neither beginning of days nor end of life. He doesn't have a beginning or an end. That doesn't sound like a human being. But made like the Son of God, remains a priest continually. He remains a priest continually. Now consider how great this man was to whom even the patriarch Abraham gave a tenth of the spoils. He was beyond being a man. He was a spirit being. And indeed, those who are of the sons of Levi who receive the priesthood have a commandment to receive tithes from the people according to the law. That is, from their brethren. though they have come from the loins of Abraham. So we've talked about this, the Levitical priest receiving the tithes. But he whose genealogy is not derived from them received tithes from Abraham and blessed him who had the promises. Now beyond all contradiction, the lesser is blessed by the better. Here mortal men receive tithes, but there he receives them of whom it is witnessed that he lives. You know, he doesn't just live, he's called the eternal. Even Levi, who receives tithes, paid tithes through Abraham, so to speak. Through Abraham, Levi, in essence, gave tithes to this being called Melchizedek. For he was still in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him. Therefore, if perfection were through the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should rise according to the order of Melchizedek and not be called according to the order of Aaron? For the priesthood being changed of necessity, there's also a change of the law. And he's saying there's a change in the way things are going to be done here. You've had the Aaronic priest and Levitical priest. Now you're going to have the Melchizedek priesthood that will take over in the church. For he of whom these things are spoken belongs to another tribe. So Jesus Christ was a Jew. He was of the tribe Judah. And the tribe, you know, if you're looking at him physically from what tribe he came from, then he wasn't to be a priest. God said that he is a priest in verse 15, and it is yet far more evident if in the likeness of Melchizedek there arises another priest who has come, not according to the law of fleshly commandment, but according to the power of an endless life. Where he testifies, you are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. For on the one hand, there is an annulling of the former commandment because of its weakness and unprofitableness. And he's speaking of the laws pertaining to the priesthood. For the law made nothing perfect. On the other hand, there is the bringing of a better hope through which we draw near to God, that is, through our high priest, Jesus Christ. So the Aaronic priesthood and the service of the Levites ended with the death of Jesus Christ. And the resurrected Christ is now our high priest and serves in the temple of God, not made with hands. We saw that Abraham supported God's work on earth done by Melchizedek in his time, and we follow his example in supporting the Melchizedek priesthood in this time. And we as ministers, we're not priests in the sense that you have to go through us to get to God. We are servants. We are ministers, but we serve that priesthood of Melchizedek. So we serve as God's servants in order to do His work. And so tithes are given to help the work of God go forward. And we see in Paul's time, as you go forward in time and the work being done, we see that the brethren supported Paul. The brethren of Macedonia are cited for this in 2 Corinthians 11. They supported him and were very supportive of him. And Paul cited that, not only there, but in Philippians chapter 4. They helped Paul financially. So just as the Levites were to live off the tithe under the terms of the covenant made at Sinai, the laborers in the church are to receive physical support of the tithes today. And let's go to one final passage here in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 where Paul brings this up and he ties it into the things that we've looked at today in regard to tithing. 1 Corinthians chapter 9 beginning in verse 1. Paul says here, am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? You know, Paul was special in that he personally interacted with the resurrected Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ directly taught him at that time. Are you not my work in the Lord? If I am not an apostle to others, yet doubtless I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. My defense to those who examine me is this. Do we have no right to eat and drink? You know, to eat and drink, he needed support to be able to do that. Do we have no right to take along a believing wife, as do also the other apostles, the brothers of the Lord, and Cephas or Peter? Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working? Whoever goes to war at his own expense. You know, you go to war, but you don't pay for it out of your own pocket, usually. The king or whoever's sending you off to war pays for that. Who plants a vineyard and does not eat of its fruit? So Paul had planted. He wouldn't eat of the fruit. Or who tends a flock and does not drink of the milk of the flock? You know, that's what a pastor is. He shepherds the flock. And who would not eat of the flock? Do I say these things as a mere man? Or does not the law say the same also? So what law is he referring to? He's referring to the laws that we've looked at concerning tithing. And you get the principle of the tithes being used to serve in the physical temple. And now we're building the church and serving the church in that physical temple. The same law would apply, just in a different context. It says, "For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain." The principle being, if you're working, doing that work of treading out the grain, then you could eat of the grain. And the principle would apply to the church as well. Is it oxen God is concerned about? You know, God gave the principle, but that's what God's focused on here is oxen? No, he's just using a principle. Or does he say it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he who plows should plow in hope, and he who threshes in hope should be partaker of this hope. If we have sown spiritual things for you, is it a great thing if we reap your material things? If others are partakers of this right over you, are we not even more? Nevertheless, we have not used this right, but endure all things, lest we hinder the gospel of Christ. So Paul was being attacked. Paul was being, accusations were being leveled against him, and he felt, even though he had the right to take the tithes of the Corinthians, he didn't. Because he felt to deny himself was better than to take the tithes from them and open himself to accusation. He had the right to do it, but he said, I won't do it that I don't want to hinder the gospel. And that's where the Macedonians, the people of Philippi, and up in that area were helping him. Do you not know that those who minister the holy things eat of the things of the temple, and those who serve at the altar partake of the offerings of the altar? And where is the temple? As we've looked at, there is a temple in heaven made without hands, but we are the temple of God, individually and collectively. Even so, the Lord has commanded that those who preach the gospel should live from the gospel. And I have used none of these things, nor have I written these things, that it should be done so to me, for it would be better for me to die than that anyone should make my boasting void. So anyway, he's making the point here that he had a right to take tithes of the congregation, but he was not doing so because of the accusations that were leveled against him. So as we look at these scriptures, the conclusion we have to come to is that the tithe belongs to God, and as Christians, we are still obligated to offer the tithes to God. And when we give to the church, we are giving to God so that his work can be done. A couple of principles to keep in mind as we think about this. One of the first things you learn is to pay God first. Pay God first. Just, okay, this is God's, that's over, that's done with, and we pay him first. And then we attend to everything else. We tithe on our increase. So if you're not making any money, you can't tithe. And there are certain things like Social Security and unemployment. You're not obligated to tithe on that because you're not earning it. But it would be probably something that you could work out to give, find a way to give an offering. The church, in looking at the administration of tithe, has concluded that taxation has risen to rather onerous levels. And as a result of that, they've seen that if you receive a paycheck, you have a net and you have a gross. And the church has determined that we tithe, you know, it's acceptable to tithe on the net versus the gross. Now, some people say, I'm tithing on the gross. That's fine. You can do that. But I'm telling you that the church administratively has felt that you can tithe on the net. And so I hope this sermon gives you a better understanding of the subject of what we call first tithe. So we have first tithe. Now, if you think of this word, the words I'm using there, first tithe, that means there could be more tithes. This is one of the great shocks of my life as I was attending Ambassador College, and the feast was coming up, and people start talking about the subject of 2T. So I asked the question, what is 2T? And much to my surprise, oh no, another tithe. which I had no 2T at that point because I didn't know anything about it. So we'll discuss 2T and 3T next time. And if you have any specific questions about tithing, then please ask them. And hopefully that gives you a better understanding of the subject from a biblical perspective.